It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if you're working from home and your work setup is still the kitchen table and it's giving you a backache, our guest has lots of ideas on how to make our home workspace more comfortable. First, it's less than a week until state electors cast their votes for president. President-elect Joe Biden and his transition team are moving forward with nominations for candidates for cabinet positions. Meanwhile, President Trump continues to claim without evidence that the election results are illegitimate. And the White House and Congress are again having trouble reaching an agreement on a COVID-19 relief package. It's the Week in Washington, where we talk about a bunch of top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the picks that Biden has made so far for cabinet and other top positions? Do you like the names you've heard so far? Are there others you would have liked to see nominated? Who do you want to see nominated for remaining cabinet posts? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Turkle is Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. Amanda, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the ongoing saga of another round of COVID-19 relief spending from the government. What is the latest? We keep hearing signs that sound like, yeah, something's going to happen, and then the brakes keep getting put on. What's the latest?
Right. It's still not clear if anything is going to happen. The White House has put out a deal this week. It was for $916 billion. It doesn't seem like it's probably going to go that far because it has a lot of things that Democrats don't like. It severely cuts the extended unemployment benefits. It does, though, have stimulus checks for $600. Stimulus checks are incredibly popular with people on both sides of the aisle. What a lot more people are looking at now is sort of the best hope for a deal is this bipartisan plan that's being negotiated by a group of senators of Democrats and Republicans, Mitt Romney, Joe Manchin, Susan Collins, and some other people. That's $908 billion. That one still has some details to be worked out. That one so far does not have checks being sent to people. It doesn't have an extension of paid sick leave provisions, and it's not clear what it would do on the liability shield, which protects businesses and other organizations from coronavirus-related lawsuits, which is very important to Republicans, and Democrats don't like it. So there is a deal, a bipartisan deal being worked out. People seem to want a deal, but there are just these sticking points that the parties so far aren't coming together on.
And in addition to that deal, which could be the basis for negotiations that everybody jumps in on, there are outside deals being offered, as you mentioned, a separate one suggested by the White House, and then suggestions from Democrats and some Republicans for those stimulus checks. So, I mean, it's not even like there's one thing that everybody agrees is the current starting point that they're negotiating from. Is that about right?
Right. I mean, Democrats and again, some Republicans really want to see stimulus checks. But Democrats also want to see extensive unemployment benefits and quite a bit of aid to state and local governments. Republicans want to see are less interested in state and local government aid. Even ones who support it want to see less money than Democrats do. And there, again, is that issue of this liability shield that Republicans and Mitch McConnell particularly really insist have to be in a deal and Democrats don't. But there have been some signs that perhaps Republicans would be willing to give that up in exchange for some other things. So again, it's all moving and it's still unclear if there will be a deal.
And the stakes here include some deadlines coming up, ends to emergency aid programs, for example. What kind of things run out, I guess, if a deal isn't reached by a certain time?
Yes. We, like you said, we have that, unemployment benefits. And we also have the other deadline I think we should mention is the government funding. The federal government could shut down on Saturday. And this is sort of a separate thing that they're working on. They're trying to get a deal just to extend government funding by one more week so it doesn't shut down on Saturday so they can continue negotiating spending for the government agencies and also the stimulus deal. And obviously, it would be quite bad right now for people if the government shut down.
We're talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's turn now to the Biden transition and cabinet appointments, and let's start things off with a caller on that topic. We've got Tom on the line in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm seeing a number of faces that we've seen before, whether they be from the Clinton administration or the Obama administration. And while their experience may be valuable, I think we need a lot more innovation and we need a lot more handing some power to people across the aisle. I would much more have preferred Colin Powell, a Republican, as Secretary of Defense, or Condoleezza Rice, a Republican, as Secretary of State. It's only if Biden's administration reaches across the aisle and puts respected people from the other side in positions of power that he will then get the cooperation of, you know, the Senate and have the appearance of, you know, a diverse and responsible and bipartisan effort.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. This is something you've been writing about a lot, Amanda, what we're seeing so far from Biden's cabinet appointments and other key announcements. Let's start with Tom's first point. Familiar faces, he says, from the Clinton and Obama administrations. How much of that are we seeing?
Well, we definitely see, we are seeing some of that. I think the most notable one is it seems that Biden is set to choose Tom Vilsack to be his agriculture secretary. Tom Vilsack was Obama's agriculture secretary for all 8 years. And so a lot of people are wondering, you know, why give him the job again? Why not go with someone different, whether it's Senator Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, or who a lot of progressives and black lawmakers were picking, which Marsha Fudge from Ohio. She's a congresswoman who has quite a bit of experience on nutrition programs and low-income food programs. But it seems like Marsha Fudge is going to get housing and urban development. And, you know, I think, you know, Tom makes a point in that, I mean, Biden has a very hard job in putting together a cabinet that makes all the people who voted for him happy. He's trying to balance people who have experience, people he personally likes, which honestly, Tom Vilsack, I think, is up there in that because he and the Bidens are very close. And, you know, he has this left wing of his party that wants to see certain people in office. He has the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And then he has these Republicans or disaffected Republicans who voted for him. I don't know if we're going to see any Republicans in Biden's administration. There were some names floated initially that he might be looking at them. But I think, you know, if he picks Republicans or a certain type of Republican, he would face a lot of blowback from his party. And remember, Obama tried to, you know, Obama put Republicans in his cabinet and tried to, and he certainly didn't get any cooperation from Republicans during his time in office.
Tom, thanks for that call. And let's talk about two different constituencies here. As you mentioned, the Biden team needing to not offend, hoping to not offend the left wing of their party. But they may face a Senate, depending on what happens in Georgia, that has a Republican control that could stop or slow down all of his appointments. How are we seeing the team try to thread the needle so far on that?
Yeah, so it seemed like Biden for a while was picking sort of what we were calling a Goldilocks cabinet. You know, maybe they weren't everyone's first picks for people, but they seem to be making the party pretty happy. You know, you had his economic team rollout, which seemed pretty smooth. Progressives were sort of gearing up for a fight because some more conservative names were floated, but they were pretty happy with the picks, even if, again, they weren't the people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren might have chosen. Because, you know, Biden is going to have to pick people that, you know, like we were saying, that Republicans do like too, because there is a good chance that the Senate will be in Republican hands next year and will need to confirm Biden's choices. Republicans are already saying that they're planning to oppose Neera Tanden, who is Biden's pick to the Office of Management and Budget. And she's very active on Twitter and has been fairly partisan on Twitter. And Republicans are saying that they're going to oppose her. But, you know, again, if Democrats pull off wins in those two Georgia Senate races, you know, Biden's going to have a much easier job, but he can't bank on that right now.
Let's bring on another caller. Bob is with us in Westby. Bob, hi.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call.
What'd you want to bring up, Bob?
I would like to comment on Lloyd Austin's nomination. I certainly don't have any reason to not like his nomination personally. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy, but it seems to me that to hire somebody who spent his whole career in the military and his 4 years since on the board of Raytheon, I'm going to reveal my age here, just seems to me to be the personification of the military-industrial complex.
Thanks a lot for that call. Oh, I got. Sorry, go ahead, Bob. You'd rather?
No. Go ahead. That's enough.
That's... Thanks for calling in, Bob. Sorry to step on you there, Amanda. This is, by the way, the topic of our 4 o'clock conversation today, all about that appointment and civilian and military control. But Amanda, that's a topic that has been raised. Having a former general not outside that window, he'd need a special waiver to become the Secretary of Defense since he's only been out of the military for 4 years. What's been the reaction there?
Yeah, a lot of people feel like Bob does. there are some Democrats who were uncomfortable granting the waiver to General Mattis to be Trump's defense secretary, but some of them did, thinking that he would be a check on Trump because he was such sort of an outsized personality and force and so respected. Some of them didn't grant the waiver and said, you know, I'm not going to do it going forward. But now they're starting to rethink that. Some Democrats still say that they're uncomfortable giving a waiver. Some say, like, you know, if Trump got to do it, Biden should get to do it too. Some are waiting to see. Some Republicans who granted Mattis a waiver are now saying that they're less likely to do so for Austin. So it's not clear yet how much this is going to divide along partisan lines and whether Austin will truly have difficulty going through. One thing that upset a lot of Democrats last time was that the House and the Senate have to grant the waiver. And last time, Mattis did not go before the House to testify, and they wanted him to. Normally, nominees don't, because they just need to be approved by the Senate. So I think this time you might see House lawmakers say that they would like to hear from Austin as well.
Let's bring on one more caller before we move on from the cabinet. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple points. I see a lot of really lukewarm corporate Democrats in Biden's cabinet, which I'm definitely not thrilled with, but he's much better than the alternative. But Republicans always talk about being bipartisan when Democrats are in control, but anytime that they're in control, they have no interest in being bipartisan at all. And I find that really frustrating, and I think it reflects poorly on the Republican Party's character.
John, thanks for the call. John says, corporate Democrats, he thinks, but he prefers them to, I guess, a Republican administration, and he's not that open to calls for bipartisanship from Republicans, Amanda.
Yeah, you know, calls for bipartisanship usually, are self-serving. Republicans want bipartisanship when there's a Democrat in office, and Democrats want the same when a Republican is in office. I mean, and to the earlier comment about the corporate ties, I mean, this is something that a lot of people in the party are watching Biden for. And, you know, that's one of the criticisms of Tom Vilsack, is that he's tied a little much to the agricultural industry. I think a lot of people, though, were happy with his choices for his economic team, because they weren't people who come from Wall Street backgrounds. They come from think tanks, academics, and sort of other backgrounds besides the financial industry. And that, I think, was heartening to a lot of people.
It's the Week in Washington. We're talking to Amanda Turkle from HuffPost. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have more thoughts on the cabinet. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're picking up our talk with Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. Let's turn, Amanda, to this military spending bill, the Annual Defense Authorization Act. overwhelmingly passed in the House of Representatives. But President Trump has said he doesn't like it. He has signaled he would veto it. First of all, what is his argument for vetoing this annual defense appropriation bill?
Sure. So, you know, it was expected to pass by a wide margin. It did. I mean, part of the reason that Trump doesn't like it is that he doesn't like the refusal to amend something called Section 230. This has to do with, I just wanted to bring up something because it was just distracting my attention a little bit. There's some breaking news about Hunter Biden that I thought you guys might want to know about. He is now, it's been announced that he is under federal investigation for his taxes. And this just broke a couple minutes ago, and it was sort of like popping up on my screen. And so I thought that was interesting because it seems sort of further, you know, the Trump administration and a U.S. attorney in Delaware seems to be sort of further going after Hunter Biden. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Sure.
So your audience knew about it. So the reason Trump doesn't like it is he doesn't like that there is a part of this that protects social media sites from legal liability. Obviously, Trump has been very upset at social media sites. He feels like they are muzzling conservatives. They are muzzling him. And so that is something that he wants to get rid of. Lawmakers don't want to. And so he says that he will veto that. But it doesn't seem like enough Republicans would go along. It's not clear whether Republicans, it has a veto-proof majority, but it's not clear whether Republicans will be willing to go against the president to override a presidential veto.
And this would be, I think, the first time if the president vetoed it, if Republicans would along with this, this would be the first veto override of the president, of President Trump. Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's telling that, of course, it comes right as Trump is leaving office. They're a little bit less afraid of his wrath and his ire, although he will obviously continue to be powerful in the Republican Party after he leaves office. But, you know, the military spending bills are something that usually attract broad bipartisan support as well.
Talking to Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. It's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. We've got one more caller on the Biden cabinet shaping up. Marty is with us in Douglas County. Marty, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering if you have any insight or let me know when Biden will be picking his Department of Interior Secretary. We are, along with a lot of other people who are much more prestigious than me, encouraging him to appoint an American Indian to that position. There's a Northern New Mexico representative, Deb Hyland, I think is how you pronounce her name. She's a member of the Laguna Pueblo, who I think is getting some pretty serious scrutiny. Any dish on that?
Sure.
Amanda?
So we have been reporting on the Interior Secretary battle, and it seems like Congresswoman Deb Haaland has quite a bit of public support. Native American tribes support her, and seem overwhelmingly to support her, at least publicly. We don't know when that pick is coming. We're thinking perhaps next week, but we're not certain on the timing. But you know, despite that public support, there's been some sort of anonymous Biden advisors pushing someone named Michael Connor, who's also Native American, who served in the Interior Department. He doesn't seem to have much outside support besides a few Biden advisors. We're hearing about Tom Udall, who's also from New Mexico. So there are a few names floating out there. There are also reports that Michelle Lujan Grisham was offered the Interior Secretary job. She didn't want it. She's a former Secretary of Health in her state of New Mexico. She really has no experience in public lands issues, and she turned the job down. It's not clear why it was offered to her. But yes, Deb Haaland is the popular choice for this. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether Biden is going to go with her.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple minutes, I just want to touch on the latest legal challenges for the Trump campaign and supporters. The U.S. Supreme Court rejecting a lawsuit about the Pennsylvania vote. What suits and what deadlines are you watching for right now, Amanda, in this ongoing saga?
Well, the Supreme Court one was big. Everyone was waiting to see what happened when a case got to the Supreme Court where Trump has, you know, picked three justices. And you know, no one even dissented. It was just one line just rejecting Pennsylvania Republicans trying to block certification of the election results for Biden. Trump has repeatedly said that if it gets to the courts, if it gets to the Supreme Court, he'll win. And he just didn't. You know, there have been about 50 lawsuits filed. Republicans have lost at least 40 times in six key states. I mean, it's over for Trump. And I think everyone knows that besides sort of in his mind. There are a few cases left. They're real long shots. The Texas Attorney General is suing. There's some, you know, sort of random ones floating out there, but none of them offer any real potential to block the election results and to block Biden from becoming president. They're sort of last gasps by like Trump supporters.
And we've seen Republican Senator Pat Toomey calling the Trump campaign now to overturn the Pennsylvania election, quote, completely unacceptable. Is there more movement among Republicans in Congress to join Senator Toomey, or are a lot of them still backing the president or holding their tongues on the issue?
Yeah, a lot of them are still holding their tongues. You know, you've seen a few people here and there willing to speak out. And I think I have to give a lot of credit to state officials who have been willing, you know, in Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, who have been willing to stand up to Trump, as he's called them personally and pressured them. And they've said no. Georgia's governor, Brian Kemp, you know, has repeatedly, and the Secretary of State, both Republicans, have repeatedly refused to go along with what Trump wants. And I think that has emboldened some more national public politicians. You know, again, they're not, I wouldn't say they're exactly profiles in courage for the most part, since they're largely staying silent or saying these sorts of things quite late. But Trump, you know, Trump isn't getting as much support, I think, as he would like.
We'll leave it there. Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amanda Turkle is Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. She joined us for The Week in Washington to talk about negotiations for government spending and coronavirus relief, the latest on President-elect Biden's cabinet appointments and other top stories in national politics. Coming up after the news, if your work-from-home space, or your work-at-work space for that matter, still needs improvement, a Wisconsin physical therapist has advice for us on creating a happier and healthier workstation. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent and her guest look to the skies with a conversation about the bald eagles of Wisconsin. And you can share your sightings. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, many people have been spending more time on a computer at home in these last 9 months, working from home, doing online school, or looking for jobs. Sometimes our setups or computer spaces aren't the most friendly to our bodies or brains. From working at the table or couch to using a kitchen chair at your desk, there's probably room for improvement and simple fixes to minimize the aches and pains. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been spending a lot of time sitting at your computer at home in the last few months? What have you done to set up your workspace? What has worked? What hasn't worked? What advice do you need? What aches and pains have been bothering you or maybe your school kids? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Andrew Starsky is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Marquette University. Andy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Good. Now, you're a physical therapist. You work with physical therapists and train them. Have you been hearing more about pains related to working or doing school from home lately?
Yes, Rob. And it actually even starts with my students and even with some physical therapists that are doing more telehealth. And our students are doing telelearning. So our students will spend 1 week in the classroom. And then they will spend the next week, you know, learning online through our computer programs that we use. So even my own students are suffering with some of these problems. So we have to remind them of some of the basics that we're probably going to talk through today. So yeah, and a lot of physical therapists that I know and have trained are dealing with these patients that have had these types of injuries too.
Now, Andy, I try, but I know in many ways at work or home, I'm not ergonomically correct. Talk us through some of the basics, the things we should be doing if we're setting up a workstation to, say, work at a computer.
Yep, Rob, you bet. All right. So even if you're sitting at your laptop right now, all right, and all you listeners, whether you're sitting with your laptop or you're sitting in your car, there's a couple of things that let's talk about that you can do. All right. So number one, let's start with your neck and your head. Okay. If you take a look at, if you're sitting up straight, right, feet on the floor, back, you know, fairly straight. Okay. Where do your eyes look? In a perfect world, if you're looking straight ahead, you would be seeing the top of your computer screen. Okay. So if you're sitting up tall and your computer screen is 6, 10, 12 inches down low, that means to look at that screen, you have to hunch, you have to flex your neck. So starts with your eyeballs. When you're sitting up straight, where do your eyes face? They should be looking at the top of your computer screen. So maybe number one, could you elevate your computer screen, okay, so that your head and neck are in the correct place. Number two, let's look at your shoulders. Where are your shoulders? Are they shrugged up? Well, get them down. Are they pulled forward? We call that protracted. Well, pull them back a little bit. Okay. And in fact, Rob, an exercise that I'll recommend to everybody right now, probably not if you're in your car, is this. Okay. Here we go. Get ready. You're sitting up tall. Your feet are flat on the floor. I want you to think about your elbows. Let's get your elbows behind you. Okay. And then let's get your elbows down. We call this trying to put your elbows into your back pockets. Okay. So squeeze the elbows back. Elbows, you know, they won't make it to your back pockets unless you have really long elbows. So there, you're squeezing your elbows behind you and towards your back pockets. Where your shoulders are right now, that's where they belong. Okay. That's in a perfect world. That's where your shoulders should be. Now take your shoulders from where they should be to where they are. If they move more than an inch, right? So for, you go from that good posture to your normal posture. If they're moving more than an inch or so, well, then every once in a while, you need to remind yourself, okay, get those elbows into the back pockets. And then final thing I'll talk about at this moment is your low back, your lumbar spine. Okay. Is it have a gentle curvature, right? Of what we call lordosis. And another simple exercise that people can do is something called a pelvic tilt. Again, probably not optimal if you're driving, but a pelvic tilt. Okay. We can do it sitting right here. Sitting, your feet are flat on the floor. And what you think about doing is rolling your butt, excuse my language, rolling your butt backwards. Roll your butt backwards, right? That creates kind of a reversal of the curve of your spine. Now roll your butt forward, roll your hips forward. That enhances that curvature of your spine. This pelvic tilt, kind of rolling back and forth, is something that you could be doing even while you're typing. Okay. It takes sitting and makes it into a much more active process. So starts with the eyeballs, right? Ideally, you'd be looking at the top of your screen. Goes to the shoulders. Ideally, they would be back and down. Ideally, your elbows would be at your side. And then ideally, you're getting your lumbar spine, your low back, moving, right? By rolling forward, rolling back every once in a while.
Before we get into more specific, that's fine. That was great advice. I'm like trying it all as you talk. So that's awesome. I'm not driving now. Now, let's talk about why we're doing this. Because, you know, we're talking, you know, a couple inches with your shoulders here, a few inches with your eyeballs there. And for, you know, just looking at something for just a moment, it doesn't seem like a big deal. Can you talk about the cumulative impact of doing things just a little wrong on our body?
Excellent. Yeah, good use of language, Rob. It is cumulative. Okay. If your shoulders are out of position, for example, if they're shrugged up, if they're shifted forward, okay, you are using unnecessary muscle activity. All right. And the research shows, I'm not going to get too nerdy here, but the research shows that you can sustain a low level muscle contraction for somewhere around 10 minutes or so. Okay. And then there starts to be fatigue. And then there starts to be other muscles that compensate. So for example, if you hunch forward too much, okay, your low back muscles will actually hyperactivate to prevent you from falling forward. Okay. So you can sustain these contractions for maybe 10 minutes at a time, which tells us that, hey, maybe every 10 minutes or so, we should be shifting positions just a little.
We are talking about building a better workspace if we're working or learning at home, though these tips, I think, all would apply at a workspace, too. Andrew Starsky is with us. He is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Marquette University, and you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Maybe you need some advice, or maybe you found some solutions yourself. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's bring on a caller now. Lynn is with us in Waukesha. Lynn, hello.
Hello.
What do you want to ask about, Lynn?
Well, I am on the computer on Zoom calls basically all morning, and then I'm on the computer the rest of the afternoon and the evening, sometimes until like 2 a.m. So my legs have been getting kind of cold, and my feet will get cold, and then I try to get up and walk around as much as I can. And then some days my legs will even hurt. And so I'm just wondering, I try to go in different positions with them, but there's not too many I can do with a desk chair.
Lynn, I think a lot of people have cold feet about Zoom calls, but this is literal. Andy, what's your advice for Lynn? A lot of time on that computer, it sounds like.
Yeah, Lynn, that sounds like long days, and I really feel for you. That's tough, but that seems to be the norm these days, is a lot of that time. So my advice would be, you kind of break one of those rules of etiquette of a Zoom call. You actually turn off your video every once in a while, okay? And what you could potentially do then is get up, not just walk around, but get fairly dynamic. Can you do a little jumping in place, a little jogging in place, you know, maybe turn off your microphone for just a moment too, so you're not breathing heavy. Get your blood pumping, okay? Even 10, 20 seconds of jumping jacks, of things like that can really get your blood pumping. Lynn, another suggestion for you too might be get yourself a box, a simple box, and turn your table or wherever you're working, turn it into a standing desk every once in a while, maybe every hour, every 2 hours. So you're standing. And again, it doesn't have to be fancy. I know people that spend thousands of dollars on a standing desk. I made my own using a box from a local store. Okay. So stand up, put your computer, your laptop on that box, and so then when you're standing, you know, you could do some simple things like little squats, little up and down on your toes. Okay. And even another final piece of advice for if you're going to do your own standing desk, every once in a while, consider taking one of your feet and putting it up a little higher, maybe on a short chair or on a little stool of some sort. Okay, so you're standing with one foot on the floor, one foot on this stool. That changes the blood flow, changes the posture of your back. Okay, so lots of things to do there, Lynn. A self-made standing desk, and then occasional dynamic movement to really get your blood flowing. That would be my advice to you.
Good luck, Lynn. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. And it sounds like a running theme here, Andy, is some change is good. Make sure we're not locked into, I don't know, any position for too long. Yep. Is that about right?
Yep. That is exactly right, Rob. You got it. So the National Optometrist Association actually has this in some of their literature too. They call it the 20-20-20 rule. And some people might know this. So that means that for every 20 minutes that you spend staring at your computer screen, okay, for every 20 minutes, you need to take a 20-second break, okay, looking at things that are 20 feet away. 20-20-20. Every 20 minutes, take a 20-second break looking at things that are 20 feet away. So that might be a perfect time to stand up at your desk, look out the window, you know, at something 20 feet away. The Optometry Association recommends that particularly for eye strain, and that can lead to headaches. So that 20-20-20 rule, every 20 minutes, spend 20 seconds looking at something 20 feet away.
That sounds great. We're talking to Andrew Starsky, clinical associate professor in the physical therapy department at Marquette University. He's giving us some advice on making our home workspaces or really any workspaces, more comfortable and healthier. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had to set up a workstation at home or spend more time at a workstation at home over the last 9 months for work, for school, for your kids doing school? Have you created an improvised standing desk, tried out different chairs? Do you work some movement in throughout the day? Do you have a question about what you ought to be doing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Andrew Starsky, Clinical Associate Professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Marquette University, talking about aches and pains from working or schooling from home, how to fix them, how to prevent them, hopefully. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions, or email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Now, Andy, let's talk about the role of stress or tension and maybe amplifying the risks of pain at a workspace. That makes us, or makes me, I'll speak for myself, ignore some of the rules that I know of good posture. What do you look at in that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a very important point too, Rob. Almost everyone seems to have a part of their body, a muscle group perhaps, that seems to hyperactivate when you are stressed. Many people, that might be their jaw, right? They'll clench their jaw when they're stressed. So you just got to give yourself a cue to try to de-stress that. Other people will have their upper trapezius, right? The upper part of their shoulder and neck. That's their stress spot. So, you know, without realizing it, all of a sudden they're hunching up those muscles. I'll tell people, set yourself a simple little 10-minute timer on your phone where it just buzzes or dings, or set it on your computer, that when you hear that ding, that cues you. It's almost like Pavlov, right? That cues you to de-stress those muscles. Ding, oh, I better get my shoulders down. Ding, oh, I better unclench my jaw. Okay, and that helps tune you in to de-stressing. And simple stuff too. Oftentimes we forget that while you're at your home workstation, you can still breathe. You can still do some deep breathing. You can still do some relaxation even during a meeting. Okay. So deep breathing, simple things like that can be helpful. And the little timer, you know, ding every 10 minutes. Hey, that's my reminder to de-stress my tight spots.
We got an email from David who says, I get a knot in the muscle right under my shoulder blade. How do I prevent it and relieve it when it happens? Any thoughts, mm-hmm. Andy?
Yeah, David. Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks for emailing that in, David. Everybody, again, that's potentially your spot. Okay. So other simple tricks, folks, that you can do for some of these spots. All right. Get out a tennis ball. Get out a lacrosse ball. Okay. And even our first caller, Lynn, was talking about how her feet go numb. This is maybe a tip that she could utilize as well. So take that tennis ball. Take that lacrosse ball. Okay. And put it on the spot where it's sore, and then just lean back, right? I'm leaning back into my chair, actually on my little tennis ball right now, and get that tennis ball to apply some pressure to that muscle to get it to release even a little bit. Okay. We're probably not going to get instant, oh, I'm all better. But if we can get that muscle to de-stress just a little, that can be very, very helpful. Okay. Another thing, for this type of situation too, and we can do this again, maybe not if you're driving, but here we go. Sitting in your chair, right? Feet are flat on the floor. Posture is good. Here's what I want you to do, folks. I want you to sit on your left hand, right? So take your left hand, put it underneath your tailbone and sit on it. What that does is that anchors your left shoulder in place. Then what you want to do, take your right hand and grab yourself gently at the top of your head. Okay. And then pull your right ear toward your right shoulder. What you're going to feel there is a gentle stretch on the side of your neck in that, what we call that upper trapezius, and a few other muscles too. Okay. Hold that stretch for maybe 20 seconds. You could do this during a Zoom meeting. Again, the video might look a little awkward, but who cares? Okay. Then you switch hands. Now you're sitting on your right hand. Okay. Palm up, sitting on your right hand. Take your left hand, grab yourself the top of your head, pull your left ear towards your left shoulder now and gently stretch. And that's the key. If you're going to do any kind of stretching, keep it pretty gentle. If you overstretch, what you'll actually do is you'll trigger that muscle to go into more of a protective mode where it's gonna tighten up again. So gentle stretching, you'll sit on the hand and pull the head in the opposite direction. And the other trick of taking that ball, right? So maybe you could sit on that tennis ball if you have a tight spot in your glutes or in your hamstrings. You could lean back on that tennis ball for that knot underneath your shoulder blade. All good, simple stuff.
We are talking about physical therapy in our home workspaces with Andrew Starsky from Marquette University, a physical therapy department there. If you've been trying to call in, looks like we're having some trouble with our phone lines. I apologize. Hope that's not adding stress to you. But we've got lots to talk about, Andy. Let's talk about chairs. You know, you can spend a lot of money on a home office chair. What are we looking for to make sure we're not hurting ourselves with our chair selection?
Yeah. So, Rob, chair selection is sadly kind of a trial and error type of thing. So first piece of advice, do not use your couch as much as you can. Do not use your couch as your work chair. Typically, couches are made for you to kick back, relax, and actually have really poor posture for a little while. So sitting on a couch typically does not put you in a good position. Typically, sitting on a couch, your buttocks are lower than your knees. Your back has to hunch. So number one, don't use your couch. And number two, it's really just trial and error. If there's a way that if you used to work in an office and now you're working at home, if there's a way that you can get your work office chair transported to your home, that can be a great thing. Okay. So if that was a comfortable chair for you in the office, boy, just take a trip and bring it home with you. So number two, if that's not possible, a couple things to look for in a chair. Number one, you want the height of your chair such that your feet are able to touch the ground. Okay. You don't want to be hooking your feet underneath you. You don't want to be, pushing your feet out away from you. Get your feet flat. Okay. Also, a good chair would give you a little bit of support in your low back. And if your chair doesn't do that, well, here's another suggestion. Okay. If your chair does not offer low back support, get yourself a towel. A beach towel actually works pretty well. Roll up that beach towel. Okay. So it looks like, a large sized Tootsie roll. And then maybe take some tape if you want to and tape it up a little bit to hold it together. And boom, there you are. You have a homemade lumbar support. Okay. You just saved yourself probably $50. Homemade lumbar support. I've had patients of mine take this homemade lumbar support and actually just tape it to their kitchen chair because the kitchen chair has good height. Okay. And now it has a little lumbar support. And don't be afraid too, folks, to think about getting a pillow, old pillow, and sit on that pillow. Or maybe only sit on that pillow for an hour and then go without the pillow for an hour. See the old change of pace. Okay. So any good chair, your feet should be flat on the ground. Sit on a pillow if you want to, as long as that doesn't make you go too high. And then feel free to think about making yourself a nice lumbar support, all right, out of a rolled up beach towel.
In just our last 30 seconds, Andy, when should we seek out a physical therapist to fix a problem?
Yep, Rob. So you can go to WPTA, that's the Wisconsin Physical Therapy Association. If you do a Google search for Wisconsin Physical Therapy Association, okay, you'll find our website and they have something that says find a physical therapist near you. If you've got aches, pains that you're not able to relieve with some basic changes of position, okay, you can go see a physical therapist and really get some more specific things to work on.
Andy, thanks a lot for joining us with the advice today.
Rob, my pleasure. Really good talking to you. Have a great day.
You too. Andrew Starsky is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Physical Therapy at Marquette University. He joined us today to share some ways you can improve your workspace or learning space at home. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, as vaccines start to roll out, can employers require their employees to get vaccinated? We'll look at some of the legal and ethical questions behind vaccines and the workplace. The U.S. House passed a law that would legalize marijuana at the federal level, though it's not expected to pass the Senate. Our guest looks at the latest developments, and you can join in with your thoughts. And Dolly Parton has been celebrated as a national icon and treasure lately. we'll talk to an author who says the country singer has been a voice for working class women for generations. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.
Good Lord, what is happening in there?
Aurora Borealis.
Aurora Borealis. At this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within your kitchen.
Yes.
May I see it?
No.
Good news, Wisconsin has a good chance of seeing the Northern Lights tonight. A combination of sun activity and clear skies make this one of the better opportunities to check out the Aurora Borealis and not just completely localized in someone's kitchen. The best time tonight, 10 p.m. to midnight, the best place away from lights. I have not seen the Northern Lights myself, but Central Time producer Dean Kinetter has. Hey, Dean.
Hey, Rob.
So set the scene for us. When did you see the Northern Lights and what were they like?
Ooh, this was about 15 years ago, I'd say. It's been a while, but I remember that there was a big blob of light directly overhead, and then from that, there were streams of lights kind of coming down toward the horizon in all directions. They were kind of purple, gold in color. It felt like almost being inside a big circus tent.
Now, were you out looking to see the Northern Lights, or are you just out and boom, there they are?
Noticed them on a drive home and pulled over, had to see it.
Love it. Dean, thanks for sharing that experience. Hope to join you someday. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.